And we've got John Major Jenkins tonight on Coast to Coast. The 2012 story, the myths, fallacies, and truth behind the most intriguing date in history. And we'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with John Major Jenkins. You know, John, I don't know if I invited you to be on our show that Friday night, December 21st, 2012. Do you have any commitments?
I do not know.
Well, then we're asking you to be on the program.
Well, that could happen.
We're the first ones to ask you. Are you accepting?
I will do my best. I don't know. I can't predict the future. Who knows? I don't know what's going on. Too far off in the future. My future planning is pretty short range.
And we have no idea where we'll all be then, do we?
That's true.
Have you, doing your work, have you come across any roadblocks with your 2012 research?
Oh, well, I don't know. Let's see. How do I answer that? I think there's been roadblocks in terms of the reception of it in official academia. You know, I'm an independent researcher, and yet my books, you know, argue these things with evidence and so on. My book, Maya Cosmogenesis 2012, came out 11 years ago and really broke the case. And but, you know, this is very typical. Many fields of study, and in particular Maya studies, is filled with independent outsiders, and they are the ones who have made the breakthroughs. But it can take years and years and years for a consensus to be achieved and for the actual material to be looked at seriously and clearly. What I found in my many years of dealing with professional Maya scholars is that they have a lot of opinions and interpretations and critiques of my work, but when you drill into it, you find that they haven't actually read it or understood it.
The work that you have put into this has been, I think, astronomical. You stand out among many in the work that you've done, John, and I hope you continue to do it, and I hope you continue to get the recognition you deserve for it.
Well, thanks, George. I really appreciate that.
What was the population of the Maya culture during this time period?
Oh, that's a good question. Tikal was the great classic Maya city there in the Petén wilderness. Actually, at the time, it wasn't a wilderness. It was actually peppered with city-states. Today, it's a huge jungle. But when Tikal was thriving in the 7th century A.D., at a time when London was just a little, you know, tiny market town of less than 1,000 people, Tikal and the environs, they believe, was home to 250,000 people.
Wow.
That is striking. And that was just Tikal. I mean, you had Washaktun to the north. You had many, many kingdoms in those areas. And so I think there were probably well over 1 million Maya people during the classic Maya civilization.
What happened to them, John?
Well, they do know that the classic Maya civilization pretty much collapsed from within. You know, cycles affect civilizations, and the Maya believe that civilizations go through their own cycles, life and death cycles, periods of increase and periods of decrease. The classic Maya civilization basically disintegrated because of a variety of things. There was greed. There was a mm-hmm. proliferation of princedoms where everybody wanted to get their little piece of the pie, and you know,
it's beginning to sound like us.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a pretty typical pattern of, you know, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire or something where, you know, civilizations go through their life cycles and they can kind of eat themselves from within and end up collapsing.
Let's take a few calls here and then full calls next hour with you. Maha, New Jersey. Tim, welcome to Coast. Go ahead, Tim.
I was just wondering, talking about the Mayan calendar, how it's based on Venus, and I was in the Old Testament of the Bible, it refers to Lucifer as in as being the bright and morning star. And I'm wondering what, if any, type of reverence that might have as to the things that the Mayans were involved with as far as human sacrifice and their calendar being based on the bright and morning star.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, Lucifer, the etymology of the word, luz, that means light. So, yeah, he's the light bringer. For the Maya, there's a myth involving Venus, the myth of Quetzalcoatl. It's a very, very profound teaching story inside of it. It has to do with the rebirth of consciousness into the light. And that happens, it's timed with when Venus appears as a morning star in the eastern sky, and that heralds the dawn of a new consciousness. So I don't think there were any human sacrifices attending these things, but the concept of sacrifice is central to this teaching story and many aspects of my religion.
And that may have been the fallacy of the movie Apocalypto with those sacrifices, brutal sacrifices in that movie, John.
Yeah, you know, of course the Maya did engage in human sacrifice at various times. That it's not that surprising. Any civilization will, you can find all the whole spectrum of human behaviors going on in a civilization at any particular time. I mean, right now, as we speak, George, there are people having ecstatic visions of God somewhere on the planet. And then also somewhere else on the planet, there's somebody being brutally murdered. You know, so the Maya civilization was no different. It was a complex, high civilization, and you had different things going on at different times. I prefer to sort of focus on, you know, given that that's just human nature, I tend to want to focus on the supreme heights of their achievements.
Where were they generally based primarily in Central America?
Well, I'm sure, you know, many people have traveled down to Mexico and Central America. So let's see how to put it on the map here.
Cancun, Cozumel, in that area too?
Well, yeah, that was the Yucatan Peninsula, Cozumel, Uxmal, Chichen Itza. Cancun is over there. Many people have probably been to Cancun. The Yucatan Peninsula is in the east. Now, going a little bit further south of there, you get into the jungles of the Peitain Rainforest, and that's where the deep classic period Maya was, Tikal and Washaktun and so on. And today, in the traditional remote areas of highland Guatemala, further to the south into Central America, that's where a lot of the traditional Maya still live today. In fact, there's over 6 million pureblood Maya living today and following different aspects of the 260-day calendar. And so, yeah, the Maya were generally more to the east, and the Aztecs were further to the west in central Mexico.
Now, the Maya still exist today, don't they?
Sure.
Many?
Yeah, millions.
Really?
Yeah, speaking different dialects and actually different discrete languages, you know. And you know, it's very, very rich, rich culture, but there's this concept of a pan-Mayan identity that ethnic Maya scholar Victor Montejo talks about. He calls it pan-Mayanism, and it's that uniting thread that unites all of Maya cultures together, the shared, coherent root beliefs of the people.
Next up, we go to Evans, Georgia. Kent is a first-time caller. Hi, Kent.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're great, thanks.
I hope you had a good day today.
So oh, thanks, Ken.
I have a couple of questions, and then I have an observation. As much as the Maya knew about, they had an extreme understanding of the universe, and the development of the long count calendar proves that. Do you think that they actually knew that the sun was the center of the solar system?
No, I don't think they necessarily thought in those terms. We have a kind of a scientific, objective viewpoint that perceives things from kind of a an outside view. The Maya were very rooted in the here and now, so they were centered as observational astronomers here on Earth, and yet they had a marvelous facility for understanding the timing of cycles and calculating them and so on. But I wouldn't say that they necessarily thought of the sun being the center of a solar system.
But they did consider it the part of the cycle of the universe itself.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Another question I have is, are you familiar with the Nemesis theory?
I don't believe so.
That's a theory that every so many hundreds of thousands of years, a companion star to the sun passes close enough to the solar system to cause mass disruption.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not familiar with it, then this questioner is really meaningless.
But well, I think it's related to the Nibiru theory. How is
right.
that different from Planet X or Nibiru? That's practically the same thing.
Okay.
Do you think that the Mayas knew about that?
No, I do not. In fact, I've been very interested in tracking the origin of this, and it seems to go back to the work of Zechariah Sitchin.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where the Planet X, Nibiru, Nemesis, I guess, this idea that there's a lost planet and it's way out there orbiting at this extreme elliptical orbit, and then every once in a while it comes in.
Right.
Now, actually, I can provide an answer to that because I did research into Zechariah Sitchin's work, and he was a very amazing Babylonian scholar. But he was looking at astrological texts.
Okay.
In the cuneiform Babylonian inscriptions.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay.
And he found this reference to an invisible planet. It's actually called Invisible Planet.
Actually.
Now. And that's his whole theory derives from there. However, the invisible planet concept in astrological doctrines referred to the lunar nodes. These are the intangible points in the sky. They're invisible.
Right.
They're the intangible points where the path of the sun and the path of the moon intersect, indicating where eclipses can occur.
Right.
So they circle around, and when they come into alignment with the actual position of the sun or the moon, then an eclipse can occur. Now, of course, eclipses were also thought to have these disastrous effects.
Of course, yeah. Uh-huh.
And so you can easily see how this invisible planet idea got sort of conflated and projected onto a very literal interpretation that he made, that there must be some invisible planet out there that's going to come in and cause havoc or something.
Okay.
That's basically my take on where that theory came from.
Okay. I was heavily involved in archaeology during the 70s. I was an anthropology student and went on several digs and concentrated mostly on eastern woodland. But I always wanted to do something to the Maya in Central America. In the 70s, they didn't really know anything about the Maya. They had a lot of theories, and they had a lot of interpretations of sort of the stone monoliths and what have you. But they really didn't start developing current ideas until much later on. That's just a piece of information I wanted to pass along to you.
Yeah, there was a lot of breakthroughs that happened beginning in the 70s at the Palenque Roundtable and deciphering the script and so on.
Right. And excuse me, one of the observations that I had that I think is just hilarious, some learned scholar, I'll put it that way, said that the reason the date 1221 2012 is on the long count calendar is because the Maya ran out of room.
Ran out of room on the stone. They ran out of room on the stone.
And I thought,
well, we lost him right at the end.
Oh, that's pretty funny, Kent. I've seen a cartoon in the New Yorker too that's something to that effect. And well, the thing is that clearly 2012 is a very intimate part of the calendrical tradition. We do have, of course, a carved monument from a site called Tortuguero, which tells us a lot about that date. So there's a specific date reference there, and there's a lot of good information that helps us understand how the Maya thought about 2012.
Right. Gentlemen, I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
What do you hear about a planetary alignment during this period, John? I hear it's not the case. It's not happening.
I don't know. I don't really, you know, I think that people hear about an alignment happening, which is basically a reference to the galactic alignment material that I've been working on, which is a fact of astronomy. And then there's kind of a tendency to make it into kind of an Age of Aquarius kind of planetary alignment thing. I don't think there is really a special planetary alignment going on. I don't know. Astrologers perhaps can call in and contribute to that, but I've looked at the charts and I don't see anything in particular on that date that involves a planetary alignment per se. The galactic alignment really has to do with the entire frame of our solar system, with the solstices and the equinoxes, and how it comes into it sort of locks into alignment with the bright band of the Milky Way.
How advanced was the Mayan civilization at that time?
This is the astounding thing, and I suspect that this is why there's so much resistance in professional circles to the implications of my research, because it means that the Maya knew about the precession of the equinoxes. The Greek astronomer named Hipparchus discovered precession in the 2nd century BC, and he wasn't using telescopes, so there's no reason why the Maya couldn't have done it around the same time. Mm-hmm. They also must have known about the tropical year and the sidereal year. It basically means that they were as advanced as their Greek counterparts at the same time.
They probably had an incredible handle of mathematics, though.
Absolutely. The long count is certainly testimony to that, a complex system of nested days based on cycles of 20. And then also the 260-day calendar is based on 13 numbers and 20-day signs. So that's like a 13 base. So you have a very, very complex mathematics going on with the Maya at a very early time in Maya history, going back about 2,000 years.
Spruce Pine, North Carolina. Hello, Hugh. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Hi. I recently saw something on YouTube that was really informative, and it covers it's a broad range of stuff from the kind of the gloom and doom. The first half is kind of quite frightening, but the second half, it kind of opens up. It has these heavy hitters in it, like Greg Braden and Michael Tessarian and a couple other fellas. But it goes into the we're in a 26,000 year cycle,
mm-hmm.
and then five sub-cycles. And we're going into the, the Age of Aquarius and ether being the fifth element.
Mm-hmm.
But and I guess we'll go into a spiritual or a physical evolution. And it's called, if anyone wants to watch it, it's pretty neat. It's called Esoteric Agenda.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you knew anything about the, maybe the evolution part. Would it be quick, or would it be over a period of 1,000 years, or if you know anything about it? And the also the Earth's pulse is increasing along with the sun's pulse.
Yeah, those are good questions. I'd be happy to go into that a little bit
when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Halloween Saturday, we'll be having Ghost to Ghost with Ian Punnett, but on Friday we'll be having a different kind of a scary show for you. Email us your scary stories to afterdark148@yahoo.com. That's afterdark148@yahoo.com. Tommy will get right back to you, and maybe we'll select your story and your call for that Friday night before Halloween. During the top of the Mayan culture, did they have a specific leader, John, that we knew of?
Like during the heyday?
Yeah.
Well, there are several that stand out. Each kingdom had a standout ruler that sort of defined the dynasty and did amazing things. Of course, Pakal from Palenque is probably the best known. But there are others at Copan in the southern areas. The Copan is an amazing archaeological site that's in Honduras, actually. There was a ruler that lived in the early 8th century AD named 18 Rabbit. His Mayan name was Huachaclahun Uba Cahuil, 18 Rabbit. And he did some really amazing things. He's really responsible for a lot of the architectural programs at the site. So each site really had its standout person.
How spread out were they at the time, and were they a warring nation?
The Maya civilization was pretty spread out from the west, sort of bordering on central Mexico, in the state of Tabasco, and then, of course, far to the east and the north into the Yucatan, and then far south into Honduras and El Salvador and all of Guatemala. They were a warring culture. Again, you know, most high civilizations are sort of expressing the full spectrum of what human beings do. They would sort of engage in a ritual warfare. We see this a lot in the carvings and the inscriptions where they would take captives, and when sacrifices were being performed, they would perform sacrifices in a ritual way. And so they had a real interesting sort of integration of theological ideas about sacrifice with territorialism and those kind of war activities.
What, if anything, John, was the most influential on the Maya culture?
Well, I think it's something that strikes us as being a bit bizarre. It's that they were a shamanic culture, and the high king of the Maya was a shaman. Maya civilization was shamanistic. Mm-hmm. So they had these integrated rituals. I mean, all cultures have rituals. All people have rituals of a kind. For them, their civilization was organized around the king who could engage in these shamanistic rituals that would help him be an intermediary between this world and the supernatural domains. And part of those rituals involved sacred plants, hallucinogenic substances. This was very, very influential for the Maya culture. I think it was something that informed their scientific endeavors, their insights into the nature of reality and the cosmos. And, of course, as well, it did have a big effect on statecraft, where the Maya king had to perform a ritual, often involving these sacred plants, in order to commune with the supernatural realm. And that is where they believed they got their power of rulership from.
Interesting. What was their belief in life after death?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's probably very similar to how the Maya think of it today, in which the world is basically divided into three domains. There is an underworld. There is this world where human beings live, and then there's the celestial world. Now, I think the Maya believe that the realm of the ancestors is the realm of the dead, but we can communicate with the ancestors, and it's a two-way communication street. And so they believe that by doing prayers and rituals at the shrines, they could make offerings to the departed spirits and the ancestors, and also receive communications from them. So there was a real concept that, you know, the realm of the dead was not some kind of separate, far-off place. It was actually very close at hand.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Amanda, Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Amanda, go ahead.
Hi, I had a question. So if our society is based on a 365-day calendar and the Mayan society was based on a 260-day calendar, then how did we come to the 2012 date?
Well, we have our own calendar that has its own timekeeping system. So, you know, the convention is the Gregorian calendar, and we date things in a certain way with the 12 months and the 365 days and so on. The 260-day calendar and the long count, actually, is a different kind of system. The challenge for archaeologists and scholars was to figure out how these two calendars go together. What is the correlation? You know, they were finding all these dates carved in the long count, but they couldn't really tell how these dates could be related to our calendar. Now we know, because scholars have figured out the correlation over many decades of work, if you find a long count date, like, say, 9 baktuns, 16 tunes, or 16 katuns, 4 tunes, 1 huinal, and 1 day, we can correlate that very precisely with our calendar, and we know that it's May 7th of 755 A.D. So in this way, we were able to correlate the end of the 13 baktun period to December 21st of 2012. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No, yeah, that's awesome. Thank you.
Oh, okay, great.
All right, very good. Next up, we go to Deborah in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, and George, thank you so much for taking my call. Very gracious of you. Mr. Jenkins, I'm just curious. This is not, you said, a planetary alignment. This is a galactic alignment. Am I right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. Do we have any information? Is there anything ever recorded in our history through archaeology, anthropology, anything recording anything like that?
From
that
our
you
own,
know of?
From like the Western tradition, our own culture.
From wherever. Is there any information about what this might imply?
Oh well, yeah. In fact, it does seem to be. I did a study of this, and there are other traditions apart from the Maya that seem to use this galactic alignment as a reference point for transformation. There seems to be a pretty persistent pattern.
Yeah.
That it does involve. It's like a target point for the end of a cycle.
Right.
And the Maya believe that, and many cultures believe that it's kind of like. When we line up with the galaxy, there's an idea that we come back to this kind of like harmonious relationship with the larger cosmos, whereas when we're not in good alignment, it's like having dissonance, like a musical chord that's very
right.
dissonant. But then when it clicks in, it's a situation where, and this work gets more into the philosophy and the spiritual teachings, which I'm very fascinated with.
Right.
But generally the thinking is that it's a time of great opportunity then for human beings to reconnect with the big picture, the sort of, I don't know, you call it maybe the unity consciousness,
right.
that sense of relationship with the universe, which is, we are part of the universe.
So it's in essence a harmonic convergence.
Well, you could call it that, but
right.
it's not something that, I mean, galactic alignment could be referred to as a harmonic convergence. That was a specific event that happened in 1987 that was based more on planetary astrology. This is a different astronomical phenomenon.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Deborah.
Mm-hmm.
John, you had mentioned that the shamans apparently were the leaders of the Mayan culture. In most other cultures, the shaman was there. He was part of them. But they always had a king who was not a shaman. Why do you think the Mayans were so different?
Yeah, well, there is a tradition going way back involving kingship. It's sort of the relationship between secular power, like a king or president, and spiritual power that would be like the priest or the pope. And way, way back in history, these two functions were integrated. They were inseparable. And then as you had a splitting apart and a specialization happening, you would often find, even in European royal houses, you'd have the king or the queen, but they'd have kind of like a spiritual advisor. You know, Queen Elizabeth had her court astrologer, John Dee, advising her on the affairs of state. So there always has seemed to be this need to have both spiritual insight and secular power sort of working hand in hand. The Maya, it was just, pretty integrated. The Maya king gained his power by demonstrating that he had spiritual knowledge that came from his shamanic journeys.
If Atlantis existed, what are the chances that the Mayan culture originated from that area?
Well, it's an interesting question. Certainly, there's a lot of unresolved and fascinating archaeology around the planet. That's, my friend Graham Hancock has done quite a bit of amazing work around that, diving, exploring stone cities off the coasts of India and Japan and so on. So I'm open-minded. You know, it's an open question. I tend to think maybe a bit more in metaphorical terms. I believe that long ago, it wasn't so much that our ancestors were primitive, you know, cave-dwelling barbarians or something like that. But on the contrary, long ago, think of the Aboriginal Indians of Australia. We tend to think of them as they have no tools, they have no mm-hmm. high civilization. But they actually, when you actually investigate this, the kind of consciousness that they had, they lived inside of the dream time. And I don't believe this was some kind of primitive, irrational state or something. I think that it was almost like a super consciousness, like a higher state of consciousness in which they were aware of how they were interrelated with the earth. And so this ancient Atlantis idea might be a metaphor for this lost, I don't want to say paradise or something, but this lost state of consciousness that human beings can have, and maybe our distant ancestors had that, and it's like we sort of lost that. So we look back historically and think that there was this continent that existed where everything was, you know, very amazing, and there was a higher consciousness going on, but I think, you know, there's many ways to talk about this. I think that it doesn't have to be on the historical timeline. I think that a higher state of consciousness is accessible to human beings today. And I think that's the challenge, in a sense. And it is pretty much tied up with the 2012 challenge of how we can access this bigger picture, this higher consciousness, so that we can really solve a lot of these problems going on the planet.
John, how would you compare the Egyptian civilization to the Mayan culture?
Well, I have to confess that I have not been able to throw myself into a deep investigation of Egyptian civilization. I totally honor it and respect it. I can see from the readings that I have done that, wow, this is a whole other can of worms. The Egyptians obviously were doing profound, amazing things much earlier than the Maya. I think they had a comparable kind of astronomical knowledge involving this key concept of the precession of the equinoxes. So both the Egyptians and the Maya were onto this, and they just expressed it in their pyramid archaeology and in their cosmologies in slightly different ways.
Okay, next up we go to Juneau, Alaska. Jeff, you're up with John Major Jenkins. Hey, Jeff.
Thank you very much, George. A privilege. A good show as always. And Mr. Jenkins, amazing. My question when I first started to call, it's been adapted here a little bit. Did the degradation of the Mayan culture contribute to basically that they didn't even continue the calendar, because you had mentioned that they were as widespread as filling out Guatemala? I didn't realize the Mayan culture was that huge. And the second question was, has anybody taken a computer model and taken it from 2012 and continued it out on that 260-day calendar?
Sure. Well, let me answer your first question, Jeff. And wow, Juneau, Alaska. I haven't been there for a long time. Beautiful place.
It is.
Yeah, your first question, basically, the Maya calendar, sketch that again for me real quick. I lost the thread.
Well, I was wondering if the, basically, they were spread out pretty thin at the end of their culture.
Oh, right. Got it. Okay. Yeah, well, there seems to have been what some scholars refer to as a materialization of time. The Maya arose out of the jungles and started carving the stones and started carving the long count in stone and developed their entire civilization, and they moved stone and they built these temples and cities. And then there seemed to be this disintegration. It's like the life cycle of a civilization.
I'm wondering if they had used trees and stuff like that to move the stones, and then deforestation might have contributed also.
Well, that is a theory that's very much in vogue right now, and there's a lot of evidence for that, that they actually burned a lot of the forest in order to create ash for the plaster that they plastered their cities with. So there's real tangible reasons for this, the downfall of the Maya civilization. And then, you know, the long count stopped being carved, and they sort of returned back into the jungles.
Teenagers don't want to take up the vocation anymore.
Right. They lost the thread of the tradition.
Right.
And secondly,
the computer model, I was just wondering.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, sure. You know, I actually did that with the Venus calendar in a book I wrote many years ago, and found that the Venus calendar still works beyond 2012. Basically, if you have the right adjustment mechanism in place, it can work for many, many, many thousands of years.
Yeah, and there's no destruction. It's a cycle.
Exactly. That's the point I want to come back to. Thanks for reminding me of that. Maya time philosophy is cyclic in nature. So the end of a cycle, it's always about transformation and renewal.
Were they incredible builders, John?
Absolutely, and they didn't use beasts of burden, so they didn't have horses or mules or anything hauling things around. It was human labor to raise these huge stone blocks and build these huge stone temples, so they were very adept at doing that.
Well, when we come back at the top of the hour, we'll take a final hour of phone calls with John Major Jenkins as we talk about his latest work, the 2012 story, the myths, the fallacies, and the truth behind the most intriguing date in history. Those of you on hold, don't lose your place in line. I'll be back.